On this episode of Get Real Podcast, I have the powerhouse Jessie James Decker joining me. She may be tiny, but man, she is fierce. She is so incredible. She's built an empire. She and Eric Decker, her husband, who's a professional football player, retired now, had a show on E! Called Game On that was hugely successful. Jessie's had such an awesome career as a musician. It's not your typical career that has followed get a record deal, have a single, have number ones. It's not that. It has been her own hybrid kind of career that she has made. She has huge loyal fans, a huge loyal fan base. And she is just so honest and real. She's written a number one best-selling cookbook. She has three kids. It's not a cookbook. It's a cookbook with lifestyle in it called Just Jessie. She just opened Kittenish, which is her clothing brand. It's taking off. Eric now works with the company after he retired from football. And she just talks about how she balances it all, her upbringing, how she grew up. She did not grow up in a fancy household with a lot of money. And she's made all this happen, how her mom has always believed in her, the power of positive thinking, always thinking that she can do it and that she's got this girl. That's what she says to herself. I'm telling you, she is so inspiring. She inspires me so much because not only is she just killing it as a businesswoman, she's also an incredible mom and wife. And I think that that is just so awesome to be able to do it all. And she's one of those Renaissance women who are paving the way, just saying, listen, yeah, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, and I'm also a businesswoman, and I'm doing all of them awesome. And she is that. So here she is. Get ready to get inspired. Okay, I'm here with Jessie James Decker in your warehouse.
This is our office / warehouse, but this is the new Kittenish headquarters here.
And Kittenish is just like, whoa, taking off.
It's been so crazy and not what I did not expect it to like be like this.
Everything you touch turns to gold though, so I am not shocked.
Thank you for saying that.
It does. I mean, your fans are crazy about you.
They're awesome and they're good to me, and I continue to say this would not be happening if I didn't have them. Like, they're the whole reason why everything happens.
Did the fans come from the music and the show, or was the show the platform that like pushed it over the edge, or where did all these like crazy Jessie fans come from?
The show did everything. I had fans from coming out before. I had my record deal when I was 19. I had an album come out. I had a gold record. Like I toured with Jonas Brothers. You know, I did have some minor success from the music side, but I always knew that I needed to do a reality show in order for girls to really get to know me, because I kind of struggled with that. And I kind of touched on that in the book that I wrote, where I was saying, you know,
Just Jessie.
My book, yeah, Just Jessie. And I kind of touched on in there that I had a really hard time accumulating female fans. For whatever reason, you know, labels like to try to sexualize you a little bit, and it just was not the right move. And so I knew I needed to do a TV show so girls could get to know me and realize I'm just like one of their friends. I'm just like one of the girls in your group that you go to dinner with and laugh all night with and be silly. I'm just like that. So I knew that I had to do that.
Because you kind of had struggles growing up with girls and like being bullied and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And what was that? What happened in your childhood?
You know, I moved around a lot. And when you're the new kid and you come into a new school where everyone's already got their groups and their friends, it's just bound to happen. It's inevitable. But I think the hard part was in one town in particular was just really a horrible situation for me. It was a town in Georgia. And I was there from seventh grade until my junior year. And, you know, it really affected me and messed with me.
What would the girls do?
Oh, my God. They would chase after me with scissors in between classes. I had hair down on my hips.
Would they cut your hair?
They would try to cut my hair. They would be waiting in the parking lot to fight me.
Did they actually punch you?
Oh, yeah. I had gotten fights. I learned how to defend myself.
You got in fights?
Oh, gosh, yes. I had to learn to defend myself. You know, I remember they were trying to egg me at a pep rally. They would boo me anytime they announced my name from cheerleading, the student body.
Was it just a group of girls, or was it like it a was, lot of
oh,
girls?
It was just tons of them. It was just constant.
Are you kidding me?
I remember being like, someone dumped a bucket of slop on me. Like, it was like the movie Carrie where they dumped pig blood on her. It was like a bucket of slop on me.
How did you even muster up the courage to go back to school every day?
It got to the point where I was wearing like hoodies and like hiding myself so no one could see me between classes, and I would, you know, watch, I would sit there and I would just watch the clock at the end of the day and just wait for it, because I knew as soon as it hit, you know, school was out, I would run. I would like haul ass to the parking lot.
Because so you didn't
I
want
could,
them to get
so I could you. Get to my car as fast as possible.
Was it just because you were like the new girl and you're so beautiful? Do you think they were just jealous?
I think it was just because I was in a new community. This was a very small town, and like everyone grew up together. Their moms grew up together. Some of their grandparents grew up together. It was just old town, old money. And I was just new and kind of out there and wore unique. I wasn't, you know, decked out in Abercrombie and Fitch all the time and wore different things and wanted to be a singer and was very vocal about what I wanted to become one day. And everyone thought it was weird. And
so you had your dreams dialed in from the beginning.
Oh, yeah. I knew I wanted to be an entertainer from the very beginning.
And they're like, who are you? Get out of here with your big dreams. And
yeah,
you know.
I think they just thought I was strange and weird. And they thought like I was, they always thought I was lying all the time because, you know, I would get to go do fun things through music. And I would, I had people to ask me where I was that weekend. I would say, oh, I went and did this, or I was in California or Nashville. They just always accused me of just making stuff up. But
oh,
it was tough. It was really hard, I will say, and it totally affected me as an adult and made me have severe, severe social anxiety.
So, yeah, tell me about your takeaway from all that. Like, how did it affect your personality? A good and bad.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we're all born with who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think naturally I was supposed to be a super outgoing person. And
I feel like you are super outgoing
with you and with, and there's, I mean, I have my moments. I am naturally an outgoing person,
yeah,
for sure. But I have my moments where I get, you know, insecure, and I've gotten better where I just, you know, I told this on Bobby's show, Bobby Bones' show.
Oh, I watched it. That was a really great interview.
He's awesome.
So
and
cute. Oh, thank you.
It's like I'm on the mic, you know. We talked about it and learned a little bit.
Because he was kind of similar.
Yes, very similar. And he and I actually have more in common than I think we thought. I just always have this assumption when I go into a new place, especially back in the day, that everyone in the room hated me.
Well, because they did when you were in
school. They did
school.
Growing up. So I got so used to having my guard up that it almost made me come off. People would think I was just being stuck up or not nice or rude or not friendly. And even to this day, sometimes when people come up to me and excited, I get this wave of like, sometimes I get kind of shy or uncomfortable, and I hate that people assume that it's I'm not being friendly or not being nice. It's just, you know, it's taken a lot of just growing up and maturing and realizing that's not the case.
And so when did you realize that wasn't the case, that you were in a safe place, and now that people aren't scheming against you? Really, I feel like most people, especially in a place like Nashville, are so busy chasing dreams and doing their own thing. Like, people don't even sometimes even know what's going on with other people.
Coming to Nashville was super helpful, and I've always said this. It's like I became friends with the same girl in every town. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, you were probably, what I mean is, you were probably the girl in your town that had hopes and dreams and wanted to be a yes, singer and entertainer. And just like my best friend Jess Southern was also
the
same girl in her town. It's like all these girls from their small towns who had big dreams, we all kind of came and found each other
and are all here.
And we're all here. So Nashville was safe.
That's so true.
Because every single one of my girlfriends was that girl in their town.
Yes.
Wanting to make it and be something different.
Yes.
And now, and we all came together.
That's so true.
And none of us wanted to be mean to each other because we knew what it was like. So everyone's so supportive of one another because we all knew what it was like.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone here is a dreamer. Like, actually, Michael and I were talking about that last night.
Yeah.
How everyone here is so exceptional. Like, especially in this music industry.
Yeah.
I feel like Nashville is an amazing town, but people are really amazing people in this town and supportive.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't feel, like, sometimes people say, like, LA is catty or whatever. I don't really know. I haven't had much experience with the LA crowd. But I don't feel that at all in Nashville.
No, no. Especially people, I think it's also just a lot of us from the South.
Yeah.
We're just not that way. And if there is any of that, then they're probably not from around here. But we're all very kind to each other and supportive and female empowerment. And that is what I love. And that's the way that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I've taken away from growing up that way is I don't ever want to be around people like that. And I don't want to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
We need to support each other because I know what it's like to not feel accepted. And so, you know, I've have a team of women around me. You've met some of them here at Kittenish.
They're all beautiful.
And everyone's beautiful and sweet and kind-hearted, and it's such a healthy environment to be in for me. And even outside of Kittenish, with all the other things I do, my agent is an incredible woman. Like, I have incredible women around me, and I'm just so lucky. And I've taken away a lot of what I've learned from high school, that that's not the way that the real world is, and that's not the way that it should be. And I think the negative was it made me super, you know, anxious. But the positive is I learned from it, and I know what way not to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, Eric's been a big help too, for sure.
He has. What has he helped you?
He's such a social butterfly.
And he's so, like, I don't feel like Eric has anxiety.
No.
Like, he walks into a room and he's like, oh, I know I'm supposed to be here, well, he was the and cool not guy. Worried about it.
He was the cool guy in school. You know, he was the cool guy in school and in college.
Has he ever had anxiety?
No. No. He doesn't. But he's also just very easygoing, and he's a dude. You know, guys don't worry about the same stuff as much as girls do. But he helped me tremendously. He was a big help of anytime I would get into a room and have anxiety or not talk to anybody. Sometimes at NFL functions, he'd be like, you got to get this out of your head. Like, give people a chance. You've got to give people an opportunity. You know, not everyone's going to be this way. And so
that's great.
He helped me a lot.
And so how do you do that when your natural instinct for your whole life is to walk into a room and feel so nervous
and shut down?
And shut down. How do you change that?
I think it's just a mindset, and I've gotten better at it because I still have those moments now. Like I said, when people will come up and I may not come off as friendly as I would like to, and it's not because I don't want to be friendly. It's because that little girl inside of me gets nervous. I really try to put it in my head and just remind myself, like, this is not the way things are supposed to be. High school was not, you know, an example of real life. And, you know, and I want to teach my daughter to have confidence and be secure with herself and, you know, realize people do like you and you have to give them the chance. And there's a lot of good.
I know. I kind of did a lot of changing of my mentality. Mm-hmm. Maybe in my 20s, my late 20s.
Yep.
Where I was like, okay, because I sort of felt that way too, like that people, I never really was bullied or anything like that, but I was very insecure and very much thought people didn't like me or they were talking about me or I wasn't good enough or all that. And so I kind of tried to rewire my brain too. It's like, okay, assume that everyone likes you until you know they don't. But then I'm like, I'm not going to give them a reason not to like me.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be in drama and fights with people. And I don't want to talk crap about people.
Of course.
So it's like, I have to tell myself that too. It's like, if that person doesn't like me just for me breathing air, then they have like deeper issues already.
They have their own issues, and it's not you and it's not me. And I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And I think when you come into your 30s, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, I feel like you get a big wave of, I like myself so much more now than I did then. I'm like, I feel like I know myself more. I have a very strong-willed personality, as you know.
Well, that's why you have an empire.
I am not good at the fake thing. I am not good at the fake relationships. I like to keep it real. And even if it's not what someone likes, at least you know where I stand. I'm never going to not be honest.
Yes.
And so I feel like that's always been my theory, and it's been working for me. And I have a lot of incredible people in my life that uplift me because of that. And I know that you're the same way, Carolyn.
You have more confidence than me. Because I still doubt myself a lot. Like,
well, you shouldn't.
You will, like, decide you're doing something and then you are, like, on it, dead set. And I'll be, like, analyzing it to the nth degree. Like, mine's a self-worth issue thing. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm good enough to actually do that.
You're good enough to do everything.
Where did you get your self-worth? It's from your mom, isn't
Mama.
It?
Mama. My mom has been telling me that I'm just the best since I was a little girl. And I'm like, there's times where I'm like, Mama, you told me too much. You got to tone it down. She's doing the same thing with Vivi, and I'm doing the same thing. My mom's like, Vivi, you are perfect. You are a star. You shine. I'm like, Mama, just
well, you
tone
can
it
tell
down.
That Vivi believes it because she is perfect and a star with that big personality already she has.
She's so funny. She's so confident. But I think you know, from my mom's childhood.
And your mom didn't have it easy.
No, my mom had it very, very hard.
What's a little bit of her story? And then where did she get her confidence?
You should talk to her at some point. Actually, you should. You really should. And hear a little bit about her background. And she just had her cookbook come out. And
she's killing it.
She's killing it. But, you know, I think from my mother's childhood and what she went through, you know, my mom always says you learn things from your child of what to do and what not to do. And she, as far as like how she was, you know, raised and what she went through, and her daddy died and she was a little girl, she went through a lot. And I think that she took that.
Was she close with her mom?
Yes, of course. Okay. But, you know, it was, she was one out of five children. It was really hard. And her daddy died when she was a little girl, and her mama was left to take care of them. And she was a nurse. Like, it was really hard. So mm-hmm. my mom, you should really talk to my mom sometime. Her childhood's very interesting. But I think my mom, whatever she went through, made her who she is as a parent now, and how she raised us. And so she instilled so much confidence in all three of us, and any dreams we had and wanted, she was like, we're gonna make it happen.
Are you serious?
Oh, my brother wants to be a ninja, let's put him in karate. Like, she wanted, really? Absolutely. And so my mother,
was that because she always had wanted that for herself too, so she wanted to give that to her kids?
She wanted that cheerleader for her.
And it's probably just hard with five kids and a single mom. And
yes, and so I think she just wanted to make sure that all three of us had that confidence to do whatever we wanted. And my mom has always been so incredible. If you see it, you've got to see it to believe it to achieve it.
So she's been doing that from the beginning, the visualization and the...
Absolutely. And so having her, I'm... Everything and where I'm at is because of her. My mom is the reason, and I will give her all the credit. She's just an incredible person, and she made me feel like I could do anything.
So your journey has been wild. So you knew from the beginning that you wanted to sing. How did you know?
I just remember singing. I don't remember having any other dream. I remember being 2 years old with a little karaoke microphone, just singing and performing. I always wanted to perform. I would sing in front of our big family, Italian family, and ham it up. And I just knew I wanted to be a singer. And I remember, for as early as I can, telling my mom I wanted to perform, and her helping me, you know, sing at fairs and festivals and talent shows. And I always knew. I remember writing lyrics in middle school in a journal and in high school, and also designing clothes that I wanted to wear on stage. I just always knew.
And now look at you, singing and designing clothes. Okay, but your singing road has not been one of like the easiest, because you've had four major label record deals.
Yes, I'm about to sign my fourth.
Okay, well, you're about to sign a record deal.
I'm about to sign another. Yeah, I can't say anything else, but I'm about to sign another one.
Well, you should, because
another.
You're selling out freaking like huge venues that artists who've had tons of hits can't even sell out. Talk to me about your journey of that, because you started off wanting to be country, but then you signed a deal in LA and they kind of made you pop. And you really didn't want to be pop.
No, I've never wanted to do pop. I've always wanted to be a country singer. Always.
Will this one be a country deal?
Yes.
Okay.
Ish.
you can't be boxed in.
Well, what's interesting is I have never been given the opportunity to sign to a Nashville label, ever.
Nashville's always said no to you.
I've never been offered a record deal still to this day by anyone in Nashville.
And
they've always been major pop deals by like incredible pop, like, you know, legends.
Who have been some of your deals with?
L.A. Reid has signed me twice, one to Epic, one to Island Def Jam, Mercury Records.
He's like the godfather of all music.
I've been offered deals by, you know, Interscope Records. Justin Timberlake offered me my first record deal. They've always been pop. I've never been given an opportunity to have a major country label. I'm not sure why.
You just dive into the pop world. What was it that was fighting it in you?
Because it just didn't feel natural to me. You know, I grew up in yodeling, and I'm a country artist, even though I'm not like traditional country. You know, but I was in love with artists like Faith Hill and Shania Twain, and you know, I wanted to be the next Shania one day. I wanted to be a crossover artist, because it wasn't because I wanted to skip out on country. I just wanted to bring country music to as many people in the world as possible, because I love it so much. So I've been doing this for a really long time, and there's many ways to skin a cat, and there's many ways for a journey to happen. And I've just kind of done it in my own non-traditional way.
Very much.
And I can truly say that I'm happy it's kind of happened this way, because I've kind of paved my own path, And like you said, I've never had a hit on the radio, but I still am selling venues,
huge venues
of thousands of people. And I pinch myself. I'm like, how, like, I feel so fortunate to be able to do this, because all I want to do is perform for people and entertain them and give back, you know?
So how did you get to the point where you felt at this place of peace with it? Because I know for a while, feeling rejected by Nashville was stressful. And then, you know, doing pop, you probably loved some aspects of it, but it didn't feel totally like you. So how did you navigate those years where you kind of felt like, okay, things are happening, but this isn't how I want them to happen, and it's not going how it feels like it should for me?
My mom, again, put things in perspective, and it was such a good point. Have you ever seen the movie Under the Tuscan Sun?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember when she's saying, Frances is saying in the movie,
is that Diane?
Diane, I want a wedding here. I want to have a baby here. I want, you know, she wanted, saying, naming all these things that she wants to happen. And at the end of the movie, the guy with the blue eyes, the Italian man, comes and he says, you got everything you wanted, just in a different way.
Yes.
Her friend had a baby at the house. And the kids that were working on her home got married at the house. Like, she got everything she wanted in just a different way. So my mom put that in perspective and said,
actually, makes me teary.
Isn't it interesting, yeah, though? She says to me, you always wanted to be an example to young girls. You always wanted to be, you know, spread confidence and make these women feel, you know, beautiful. And you wanted to sell out shows. And you wanted to, she just named all these things, find true love. All these things that I hoped and dreamt of, they just happened in a unique way. Interesting way. And I have finally, you're right, it used to stress me out, and I used to cry over this all the time, like, why isn't this happen this way? Why don't I get to go to the awards and win Best New Artist? Why don't I get to be on the radio and hear my song? Well, I am finally at a point I can truly say over the last year where I am so happy and grateful and feel so at peace with the way my journey has taken me, and I wouldn't change anything about it. I'm so happy. I have incredible women around me, and I have the most amazing fans, and I have a beautiful family, and I'm so happy. It's like, I'm grateful, and I feel like it would be wrong to be wanting anything else. Like, this is, you know, I'm so happy.
So how did you deal with rejection, though, when you were in the big middle of it?
Yeah.
Especially for girls who are, like, in their 20s, maybe feeling lost, maybe feeling like, where am I supposed to go? Like, this is not... Nothing's working out. Even though it is, it's all about perception.
Everything's about perception. I think, you know, I definitely had these moments where I was just so just devastated that no one would sign me here, or I couldn't get the right team, or I did feel rejected, and it was really hard for a while there to just not feel wanted, you know, and those feelings of feeling not wanted in high school.
Does it trigger?
Triggered it. And so that was, it was hard to feel so unwanted in school growing up and to feel so disliked, to then have it sort of happen in a different way through not being offered deals and being turned down by everybody. It just made those feelings come back of, gosh.
It's kind of the same scenario, because it's like you're just being yourself, showing up.
And people are not.
And people just aren't.
Don't want it.
Don't want it.
Absolutely. And I started to focus, I think it was a moment where I was like, I'm going to stop focusing on the people that don't want me because they don't deserve my energy. And yes. I'm going to start focusing on the people around me who do accept me and do appreciate. And I'm putting my energy into those people because they deserve it. These people over here that don't like me or don't want me.
And they don't get
they
it.
They don't deserve me.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're missing. And that's the attitude that everyone should have. Stop focusing on the negative of the people that don't like you. That's not in your control. You know, they don't deserve your energy.
Yeah.
The people that accept you and love you, put your energy towards those people, and I'm telling you, good things will happen. The universe will turn it around, and that is what's happened.
When did you have your moment of, I'm happy, like, I'm at peace, like, everything is amazing?
As soon as Forrest was born.
Your third little baby.
My third
bundle
baby,
of joy.
He, oh my gosh, I just remember feeling so happy. I don't know what it was. It wasn't just because I had a new baby. Because
do you love having new babies?
I love. Oh my god. There's just, you just wait for it. It's the
even most, though you're exhausted and it's terrifying.
The first one was terrifying and exhausting, but it's like by the third, you know what's up. You know what to really? Expect. Oh my God, my first delivery was so traumatic and I had really bad postpartum depression after. I mean, I struggled. Second one, I had I still had some postpartum, not as bad. Third, didn't have an ounce of postpartum.
Why do you think you didn't have any?
I think the hormones, as my mom says, the hormones just kind of worked themselves out. It's a real thing. You know, your hormones can go wacko, and mine totally did. I struggled, and my delivery was very traumatic. It just didn't go to plan. I was in labor for 14 hours and throwing up in between contractions. Epidural didn't work, so I'm in labor. You know, I was in severe pain. I was pretty much faint, just kind of becoming faint, where I was falling asleep through the pain. And then Vivi, we had to have an emergency C-section. She was stuck in the birth canal.
Oh, and like her heart rate was dropping.
Everything was just going bad, and they had to strap my arms to my side, and I remember crying.
Oh, this makes me want to cry.
It was horrible, and I remember being half asleep. And I like was laying there just not knowing what was going on, and they wouldn't let me hold her after because they thought I was too crazy and out of it and delirious. And I'm screaming at the anesthesiologist to let me hold my baby and let go of my hands. And it was really terrible. And I had to go to the recovery room because I was so mad. I was just so out of it. She and I went through it. But, you know, and I think I'd had this whole vision of how my delivery was supposed to go, and I kept focusing on that because I thought I was going to push and have her come out on my belly and this whole thing. And my baby was taken away from me, and it kind of prepared me for the second, because Bubby was also taken away from me right after because he wasn't breathing. So we had to go to the NICU for a few days. So that was tough. But by the third, I was like a pro at this, and it could not have gone smoother.
Really?
I still had to have a C-section because I grow 9-pound babies and I'm a tiny person.
That's insane that you can fit a 9-pound baby in your belly.
Agreed. But I remember it was such. Does Eric not know we're in here doing this?
Hey,
he's just banging away in the office.
Don't worry, it's just real life. It's called Get Real.
I know. He's so good. Look how cute he is. He's so hot.
He's so hot.
So hot.
What do you do just looking at that hot piece of man every day?
I just grab him all day long.
I mean, y'all are very sexual.
I just want him all the time. I totally do. I always want him.
Can you have time for adult activities with all the things you have going
on? For sure.
I feel like that's a big priority for you guys.
Oh, I think we're just so into each other. I don't know. Anyway, back to my delivery.
But which is how you got babies.
That's how I make the babies, is with him. The third was really special. He came out. He did need a little bit of the breathing treatment, but he was only a week early, 9 pounds. And I remember thinking they were going to take him away because every time they'd taken a baby away from me, and that was hard. And I was expecting them, and they wrapped him up and they put him in my arms in the C-section room. And I looked at the nurse and I go, I get to keep him? She was like, yeah, he's fine. I remember being like, oh my God, I get to hold my baby. So he was wrapped in my arms. They opened the surgery door and they brought me, no recovery room, straight back to my room.
No way.
And I remember just tearing up thinking, I get to keep him, hold my baby. And within 15 minutes, he was nursing perfectly, no issues. And I just looked at him and I was like, we got this. Like, we got this. We're pros. He nursed like a pro. It was just, I think at that moment I was like, oh my God, I just love being a mom. This is like, oh my God.
What do you love about it the most?
It's my favorite thing that I do in this world. It's the reason I'm on this earth, is to be a mother.
Which is crazy, because you also have a lot of other reasons that you're on this earth that are very big.
For sure, but it's my favorite out of all of it.
Tell me what you love about being a mother. How's it changed you too?
I think it's made me a better person. It's made me a selfless person. You know, we're all young and we can be a little about ourselves, and that's okay. We learn from it, but everything is about them. Every time I have an eyelash or blow out a candle, it's my wishes for them. It's always for them. All I want is for them to be healthy and happy. And they're just my purpose. They make me who I am. And I don't know, once you have your baby, you'll look at them and realize everything you do is for them. And there are these people that you created out of love. You truly made these babies out of love. And I can't, it's just something you can't explain, but I woke up to Vivi. She crawled in our bed and kicked Eric out, which is what she does. And I woke up to her and her face in my face and her open her eyes going, "I love you, mommy." She does it all the time, and she'll rub my face.
God,
and
this makes me all emotional.
It's special though. There's just nothing like it. And I say this to Eric all the time. All of this could go away, and as long as I have my babies, I don't care. So that's all that matters. All this stuff is so much fun and powerful, and it makes me a good mother because I love working and I love being a businesswoman, and it gives me the confidence in it, and I'm making all these dreams come true. But I feel like being a mother makes me better at all the things that I do.
How do you find balance with three kids and
kittenish? I put them first.
How do you do like touring, kittenish, and have a strong marriage and have three kids? Like, how do you, just like, I'm talking about day to hours in the day. Like, how do you make that happen?
I feel like Eric and I just prioritize.
And he loves being a dad.
He loves being a dad. He's the best dad ever. We just prioritize, you know, our family is first. Our kids are first, you know, and we do everything together. And I'm not saying that every family is like that, because Eric and I are also fortunate that our jobs, he's retired now, so we can do everything together. And
yeah.
I know that what real life is like. I know it's tough. I grew up with it. You know, when your parents have couples have a 9-to-5 job and there isn't time, and you come home and you're exhausted, but you still have to take care of the kids and make dinner and get up early. I know, and I've seen it. So I've seen both sides and I get it. So I think that's why it makes Eric and I both so grateful that we're fortunate enough, because we've seen that side of life where it just gets real. But I think why Eric and I work out so well is we started out just us together, and our foundation was so strong. We not only loved each other so much, we liked each other. Mm-hmm. And we just started out so strong. And I think that foundation was really important, because once you have kids, things get serious and it'll test you, because, you know, you're exhausted and, you know, there's three people you're looking after. There's moments where we're like, oh my God, we're going to lose our heads, because we're just so, these kids are making us crazy. But that's where one of us will take the reins, and I'll say, Eric, go to our room and just take a little break, and I'll take over. Or vice versa. Or he'll say, let me have them, you go take a moment to yourself. And it's just that being courteous of one another and understanding. And we're a team, you know, it's all about a team. Mm-hmm. We're never against each other. We're always with each other. And that's our main thing, is we are a team together and we are in this together. There's no wrong, right.
So y'all don't keep score?
No, I think, because if he loses, then I lose. We should always win together. And
what do you do when you're frustrated with him?
We just communicate.
So if you have a frustration, do you just express it?
Absolutely. Right then and there.
Talk it out.
Right then and there. Yeah. Right then and there. Like, you know, if I made up a mess or something and I pick it up, he'll be like, babe, can you next time please, like, clean this up?
And instead of being like,
instead of huffing and puffing and getting mad, yeah, I just go, I'm sorry, you're right. We always say we're sorry if we're upset about something. That's, we nip great. It in the bud. We're not prideful. He and I are just not prideful like that with each other. And
so you never let it build up to like, no, a massive,
I can tell you now, and people won't believe this, we have never had a big fight. Just
really?
Never. No. Because we talk about it. We just get through right there. We communicate with each other. You have to just communicate so it doesn't build up. Who wants to fight? We don't want to fool with all that. We got more important things to do than have a battle of who's right and who's wrong. All that's silly to us.
And you guys both prioritize each other. So no one ever feels neglected or not valued by the other, it seems like.
Absolutely.
Because I think if you feel valued by your spouse, then you don't have to put up a big fight to try to get that value or to get that attention or get that, you know, respect that you're looking for, because you automatically, y'all just give it to each other.
We do. And if you have to, you know, fight and do all that to get attention, then you should really reevaluate your situation, because it shouldn't go there.
What happens if you have like kids and stuff and you're in that situation? What would you suggest?
Oh man. You know, I just feel like you really have to think about your kids. What do you want them watching? What do you mm-hmm. want them being influenced by? What do you want them to see? Because in our house, they see love and they see happiness, and they've never seen us have an issue or bicker or fight, because we don't do that around them and we don't fight. But if we have a moment, we go talk about it somewhere else, because we don't need our kids feeling stressed out by that. So I think in a marriage, if you're having continuous issues and you're fighting in front of your kids, I would seek counseling and really try to find a better way to communicate with one another, because your kids don't need to see that, because then they will, you know, mirror that. And then they will do that when they grow up, and you don't want that.
No.
I had a really great scenario where I saw what not to do. And then when my mom remarried and married my dad, Steve, I learned what to do.
Because he's just a prince.
They're so in love.
And that's the thing. How sad to miss out on love.
Yeah, and you shouldn't. My mom was brave, but she found her soulmate, and they are soulmates. They are so in love. They've been together for almost 20 years.
They're still, like, making out.
Oh, they're it's intense. But they love each other, and I can truly say, because of that marriage, me, my sister, and my brother are all in healthy, happy, loving marriages.
Really?
John and Allie are getting married, but they're perfect for each other. And Sydney and Anthony are perfect for each other. We all just, our standards were so high, and we wanted that love that we witnessed. And so it was a healthy thing. So that's why I say to people, if you're in a relationship where you're fighting and bickering and your kids are watching that, you don't want them to have that growing up. You want them to be in love and be happy. So set the example. And if it's not right, then it's not right.
Mm-hmm. That's really, I mean, your mom is insane. She's a rock star.
She is. She needs her own show.
I know.
She needs like her own like love advice show. I've learned so much from my mother. Even to this day, if there's something that I call her for advice for everything.
Is she the one who always tells you the truth?
Always.
Will she tell you the hard truth?
Oh, absolutely. But I also think, like you said, it's just perspective. She always puts things in perspective in a way that I can really think about it.
If you had to describe a motto for who you are, what would it be? Like, what would your one little phrase be about you?
Well-behaved women rarely make history. I just always liked that when I was a little kid. And I think sometimes you got to break some rules, you know, to break records, you know, to break the mold. Sometimes you just gotta switch things up. Now, I'm not gonna say and like run from the law or anything, but I just think sometimes you can't be boxed in. Yeah. And I am one of those that have done things my own way, and I'm not gonna be boxed in.
And it's worked for
and
you.
And it's working, and I ain't done yet.
I feel like you're just getting started.
I am just getting started. I have a whole plan of, I need dry shampoo. This is greasy. It's so greasy. I have a whole plan and a whole vision of what I want to do, and I am just getting started. This is just the beginning.
You know what I find very inspiring about you is a lot of things, but I love that having kids and being happily married has done nothing but speed you up.
It has.
Because I feel, it actually makes me teary, because I feel like you are kind of changing that mold where a lot of women feel like their life is over when they have kids or get married, and they feel like they can't chase their dreams, or they feel like they have to stay home, or their husband is the total breadwinner and they have to just sort of be the housewife. And that's sort of outdated, but you're part of that huge movement that is changing that.
Absolutely. And I feel like I am switching things up, and women today are doing that. But I'm able to do it while still having those traditional values.
Which is amazing, because you're not sacrificing on any of it.
No, I still come home and make dinner every night for my family and bring my husband his dinner to the table. And we say our grace. And, you know, I still have those traditional Southern values. But I am the one working now. You know, I'm the one with the job now. And
you all kind of traded.
We've kind of traded, and he's helping me just like I supported him through his entire 8 years in the NFL and was his, you know, right-hand woman. He's now my right-hand man, and you saw him in here today. He's putting things together, and, you know, he's very much engraved and Kitnish now and handling a lot of the business side.
Does he like doing all the business stuff?
He got his master's degree in business management, so this is his bread and butter.
So this is kind of an awesome second phase for him.
He is loving every minute of it. He's doing other things like investment properties and businesses and stuff, but it just kind of naturally happened. I needed a little help, and he is so, you know, deep in this now and is involved. I mean, he's a part of the company now. And
how is it working together?
It's awesome.
It is?
It's so fun. Yeah, because we get to be together all day, and we share the same passion now. And I think he sees how much Kitnish has grown that he's like,
let's do this.
This is serious.
We need, he's got like, that athlete, let's win the Super Bowl mentality.
Absolutely. And it's not even like, it's not like, this is not a hobby anymore. This is like
a business.
This is a business that is growing. And we, this is very serious to him now. And so he wants to help. He wants to help us just get there.
And to have his like laser focus and the ability, like an athlete. I mean, who gets stuff done more than a professional athlete?
Oh, I know. The work ethic is the work crazy. Ethic. He's up at 6 a.m. and ready to go.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's crazy. It's awesome though.
So at this point in your life, does anything still make you feel vulnerable?
Oh, let me think about that. I think just kind of going back to, I still feel very vulnerable, you know, when I'm entering a room and there's a lot of people. I still feel vulnerable when I walk on stage, even though I seem like the most confident person. I still feel vulnerable when I'm in a party in a crowd of people. You know, I'll always probably have some of that social anxiety that I'll have to continue to work through every single day, but it's getting better. But I would say that is still probably the thing that makes me feel most vulnerable, is being in kind of a that environment that, you know, really affected me. But it's getting better, and we all have our thing, and you know, I still work on it every day.
Is your self-talk, what does your self-talk look like? Because I have done a lot of research about my self-talk, and I like to ask people about theirs, because I didn't realize for the longest time I had really negative self-talk. Like, I just, like, defeated self-talk. I didn't feel like I was good enough. I would always, like, talk down to myself in my head. And I feel like you probably have really good self-talk. Like, what is the voice in your head telling you the most?
You got this.
So your self-talk is good.
I'm always telling myself, you got this. You got this, Jess. Or I hear my mother saying it in my head. You got this, girl. Like, you got it.
So you always are empowering yourself.
I'm always empowering myself so that I don't let the negativity enter. I have gotten really good at, I call it brain blocking. Like, anything negative coming, any crazy thoughts, anything, I like block it immediately and start thinking of something else.
And do you just like put an iron curtain down?
I do. I just shut it down, because I used to sit there and just dwell and overthink things.
How do you make those thoughts go away? What if they're a strong thought that's coming, a strong negative thought? Like, it's like coming on like a tornado.
I truly try to distract. I'll think of anything else. I'll start singing a song. I just shut it down immediately, because it's such a negative thing. And I used to just sit there and let it just simmer in my brain, and I don't do that anymore. I shut it. I truly shut it down. I don't have a way to explain it, except just through age and not wanting to feel that stress or anxiety from negative thoughts.
I'm like, it's all fake anyway.
I don't want to feel that way, so let's just get rid of it.
What about fear? Like, because I have a lot of fear with my unborn child already. Like, I'll have a lot of, like, paralyzing, fearful thoughts that come to me.
It'll always be that way.
How do you...
I'm here to tell you that won't go away.
How do you move through fearful thoughts?
I'm always afraid of anything happening to my kids. Always. And that will never go away.
What if you hear about something, or you feel like your kids could have gotten, like, exposed to, like, a sickness or something? Like, my big thing was Zika for a while. I was just, like, so paranoid about Zika that it was, like, crippling, because I was scared it was going to affect the baby, because Michael went to the Dominican Republic.
I know it sounds crazy, but like, I shut down any outlet that can cause that fear.
How do you shut?
I don't look at Twitter anymore. I don't even have the app on my phone. I shut down any news outlet that comes. I don't look at the news. I don't look at anything. And maybe I don't know a lot what's going on in the world, but it's better for my mental health. Think about back in the day when people didn't have social media and access to this thing. They were living in a little bit more of a, hopefully, a happier world. Yeah. You know, I don't need to see all the negativity, because all the news is negative.
It is.
I don't want to look at it. I don't need to hear about it. I'm not going to get into it. I am going to focus on my family and my situation. And if I do hear about a negative story, all I can say is, you learn from someone else's, you know, whatever happened with them, and try to, you know, hopefully it was a lesson, or I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. If I ever hear of it, like a scary story, like someone getting a Zika or something, it's like, okay.
Say you hear of like a tragedy that happens.
Then I'm just like, you know, my first thought is, how can I help, in my mind? And the second thought is, you know, that tragedy is now going to help others to learn from it, to help hopefully prevent. So that's the only positive way that I can think of it. You know.
And you don't let it creep in?
I try not to. I mean, sometimes it'll weigh on me, but I try really hard to not let it creep in. because all it will do is just fill me with anxiety and stress. And I
and you can't just, enjoy your family and then I can't enjoy
my
life.
Family and my life, you know. So,
gosh, Jesse, oh, that should be your next book, all about like self empowerment, like thoughts.
I would love to do something like that.
Yes.
I do have a cookbook coming out.
Oh, you do?
I was just on
Jessie
a call
has
before
some cookbook.
It does. It would be only 20 recipes, but this next one's going to have over 100 recipes. It's called Just Feed Me, and I'm shooting the cover, I think, next week, and it'll be out next year.
So you just love to cook.
I love
to Are you cook. Self-taught?
Yeah, my mama helped me and taught me and gave me some recipes, and then since then, I just kind of, I don't know, it's just instinctual. I come from a long line of Italian Cajun cooks, and just, I don't know, it's kind of just in me. I love it.
Are you a healthy cook?
I do cook healthy. I, you know, just because I'm having, you know, carbs from a pasta or I'm using ricotta cheese or something, doesn't, I mean, even though there's carbs or fats, I know what I'm putting in my food. I'm not going to a restaurant all the time where I don't know what they're putting in the food or how much sodium. I know what's happening, and I find that all of us are healthier for it.
Do you eat like small portions? Like, how do you stay so fit, honestly, and still enjoy your food?
I think portion control for sure. And sometimes I do a little bit of an intermittent fasting. Like, I haven't eaten today.
Okay.
But I'm about to have me a turkey sandwich with some barbecue chips that Eric's picking up. But I just think that, you know, I try not to overeat, especially my body, like, gets kind of shut down if I overeat. It's not even because it's just a health or trying to look skinny thing or a fit thing. It's like my stomach, I have a sensitive stomach, so I can't overeat anyway. But I really do follow South Beach, truly. That really helped me lose all the weight after Forest. That was a tremendous help. And that diet kind of taught me portion control. So I think I used to overeat and not realize it. And now I can just eye food and be like, all right, I probably should just have one serving of that.
And you can stop.
Mm-hmm. Because you train your stomach to kind of shrink a little. But when you're pregnant, just go all out, I say. Just go all out.
I've already gained 30 pounds.
I'm well, like, you look amazing. They should have gained 55 like me. I go crazy.
And you're 5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me feel better, honestly. Ooh, is it bad girl, that I feel
like,
better?
I have like four chins.
Is it terrible that I feel better that you gained 55 pounds?
Go
I'm like, okay,
it.
You bounce back.
I never worry about that when I'm pregnant. It's my time to eat, and I'm growing a baby. And like, you don't need to be worrying about that. You're growing a life. And then even after the baby, that also needs to not be a focus. You need to like keep weight on so you can produce some good healthy milk. That for me, that's what
so
it
you
was.
Never stressed out about losing it right away?
No, because it's like, this is about the baby. This isn't about me like looking like a, you know, a hottie right now. I've got work to do, and I have my job is to nurture and nurse this baby.
Like, I do not feel, I feel cute, but I do not feel sexy. Like, before I got pregnant, I was like, I worked my sex appeal. I felt sexy and stuff. But as soon as I've been pregnant, I'm like, I sexy is not the word I would use to describe myself.
Well, you're not meant to feel sexy right now.
Yeah.
I think you're meant to feel like nurturing and nest and prepare for this baby. You know, it's not really about that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, we did what needed to do to be sexy. Now we're pregnant. And now
does it come back? Do you bring sexy back?
Yeah.
Because you got it back.
I feel sexy again. I feel, you know, but it's all in good timing. And I got to. A man that makes me feel sexy no matter what. But, you know, as women, it doesn't matter if they think you're sexy. If you don't feel good, it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't work. But, you know, it came back, you know, and it comes back in due time. And, you know, obviously if you're used to feeling fit, you do get a little bit of a panic and a rush after babies. It's never because, oh, I want to look good again. It's just, I feel my best when I'm fit and healthy and, so that would be the only time I'm ever like, oh, I really got to get to it. But it's just, you know, it's how you feel. And I feel great now.
What are your thoughts on social media? Because like talking about pregnancy, you shared your whole journey. Like right after postpartum, you're showing your belly.
Oh, yeah.
You're showing the good, the bad, the ugly. Mm-hmm. And how did you decide to be that way?
Because I feel like, you know, with my followers, I feel like they depend on me to be real. And I'm not one of those social media influencers that like, look how perfect everything is and photoshopped and edit. That's just not my jam. That's not my vibe. And we follow those people. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that's wrong, but that doesn't work for me and my followers. I like to be honest and keep it real. And, you know, 80% of my photos don't have makeup on. And I'm just, because that's not real. I don't have time to do all that. You know, I got stuff to do and I want to be honest. And I feel like it would be a disservice to not show the real side of post baby to my followers, because then that makes them feel bad if they're not where they think I am. And that's, I just don't think that's fair. So I do show everyone where I'm at after every baby because it's just real. And it's like, this is how I look. This is normal. This is what's natural. You know, this is the majority of women. We have our bellies are expanded and, you know, our bodies are just, we just grew a human being. So the expectation to look perfect after a baby, I just think is not fair to women at home looking at their phones, because then it gives them a false, you know, idea of how things are supposed to be. And then that just makes them sad. So I'd rather not do that and be like, let's just be real together. And we're in this together. We're all women.
Yeah.
We're all mamas.
What are your thoughts on social media?
I think social media has given a lot of people jobs. I think social media has given brands a chance to have their voice in a more authentic way. I think it's, I think it's a really good thing. But I think there's obviously negatives where people feel like they can just say whatever they want and hurt you. But again, I don't see a lot of that because I shut down. If anyone says anything not nice, I just block them.
Mm-hmm.
I just block them and I move on. I don't get into it with them. Sometimes I write like a funny something, but.
So you don't get into like Facebook or Instagram?
I don't have a Facebook. I don't look at Facebook. The only thing I look at is Instagram. And if there's anything negative, I block them and shut it down. It's just, I don't need to see all that. I got stuff to do. I'm too busy to be seeing mean trolls who don't have much going on.
How do you feel about the comparison game with it all? Do you think that that's been a thing?
I don't know. I guess maybe, but I don't.
But you're so real with yours.
I feel like I don't really get into it that much. And I don't compare myself to anybody because I just like, I don't know. We're all unique individuals. And I think it should stay that way. We're not all the same. And so I don't really compare. And I think that comes from being happy and confident in my life that I don't want to be like anybody else. I like where I'm at.
I love that. Okay. So I like to wrap up every interview.
Okay.
With Leave Your Light. Which you're such an inspiring human in general, but what do you want people to know? Like, what do you want your fans to know, women to know? What do you maybe wish you could have told yourself when you were younger? What is something that you feel like you just want some inspiration that you think people should know?
I would say that something that I would inspire people through, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just some like drop in some wisdom that you wish that you think people need to know to live a healthier, happier life or inspire them.
I think if I could tell myself, the 16-year-old me in high school, anything as far as inspiration, it would be, you'll be out of here in 4 years. This doesn't really matter. All of this does not matter in the grand scheme of things. This is 4 years and 80 years, 90 years. This just doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Do not become so sucked in this little crazy bubble that's happening, because you'll never see the majority of these people again. And it just doesn't matter. That's what I wish I could have told myself. And as far as advice goes, I would say to really hone in on that individuality, because that's what makes all of us so special and unique. You know, really, I feel like that's what inspires others, because chances are if you feel unique and different, someone at home feels the same way, and we should all be in this together, especially as women. All I've ever wanted was to have women around me, for women to like me because I like them, and to be in this together and have this sisterhood, and I finally have that. And if we all would just lift each other up, things would just be so much better. So that is my advice, just to lift each other up. We're truthfully, when it comes down to it, we're all of the same. We're all using tampons. We're all trying to make things work and find the good bras and find the good yoga pants. And, you know, we're all just trying to keep it together. And if we can all do it together as a team, I just think it'll be a happier place.
Amazing. Jesse, you're amazing. Jesse for president.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Of course.
Bye.